Welcome to Dragoncast. Home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho.
That's me being Santa, Chris Mandel.
Being... I thought you were going to do Ho, Ho, Hodor.
Oh, fuck on. Ho, ho, hold the door. How are you, Chris Mandel?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, wintry. We're recording this on morning of Monday, the 12th of December, 2022. And as predicted every year, and the world just goes to shit in the UK whenever there's a snowflake, whenever there's a bit of heat. We can cope with nothing except dreary grey weather in the UK. It's pretty
winter boring. Has come.
Winter
today.
Has come. It certainly has.
Winter has come.
It certainly has. So welcome everybody. We're talking about season 2, episode 5 of Game of Thrones, The Ghost of Harrenhal. Is it that one? Just The Ghost of Harrenhal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That is right. Yeah.
But before we get to that, I thought we'd go through. I always forget to like look at comments that people have left on YouTube in particular, mainly because YouTube is just still a mystery to me. But we've had lots of good questions, actually. Thank you so much for everyone getting in touch. I can't remember. Hell's Bells Tells has said, that bit with George cracking one out had me in stitches. Well played, Chris. What's that referring to?
Last episode.
I guess so. Hang on a sec. That's from season 1, episode 1. We must have been referring to George R. R. Martin cracking one out.
Yeah, I mean, I is one of my favourite phrases, but I can't remember the context. We should have a no context Dragoncast Twitter account.
That's true. Man of Bronze, Man of Bronze has said, loving that Chris has got a whole Friends ugly naked guy style neighbour situation. Let's hope they're dressed for next week. What's going on with the cigarette smoking scuzz balls that you live near?
She's out. One of them's out now having a fag.
Really? Amazing.
But do you know what really blew my mind yesterday? So on Sunday night, it was snowing and, you know, we had a couple of mates around for dinner. They had to trudge home in the snow because there's no trains.
Yeah.
And I went out, put my head out. You know, I had a couple of drinks last night. I was like, I just want to get some fresh air. It's like 11:30 at night. Yeah. Snow's falling. It's fucking freezing out there. Who's out there having a fucking smoke?
Perfect. Professional smokers.
My neighbours.
I do admire them. I do admire them.
But they've got the tree up. And then do you know what? They've got the tree up before they've got any curtains. And I think priorities, I have to respect that.
Yeah,
they've got the priorities sorted. And I'm a Christmassy. I'm as Christmassy as it comes. So I'm like, do you know what? We have a lot in common.
Yeah, fine.
But yeah, that's nice to see that they has gone down well in the comments.
Eltrop, thanks for getting in touch. I know what this is about. This is about season 2, episode 1. This is about last week's episode about my conspiracy theory, or the conspiracy theory circulating about Longclaw. Eltrop is saying the Longclaw eye-opening saga was determined to be a drop of water. Nothing more, nothing less, which is quite sad, really.
Oh, that's interesting. And we did have someone on Twitter was talking to us last week about our theory that the episode was cut differently because we seem to remember it starting with Stannis, and somebody did reply to us and say they were going to do that and they didn't, so we are imagining it, but I think it's something on the DVD extras.
Someone called Helen messaged me on Instagram just saying that they had the same vision in their mind.
I think
there's a later episode. I think that's what we're doing. We're getting confused with our later episodes. So those of you new to the episode, not got a clue what we're talking about. We reviewed season 2, episode 1 last week, and Chris and I had convinced ourselves completely independently that the episode began with Stannis and Melisandre on the beach. But we think that comes a bit later on where they're kind of torturing men and stuff, I think.
Probably because, and we sort of know this, they're setting sail. Hmm. They're going to sail to Blackwater Bay soon. So before they go, they're probably going to do some kind of spooky ritual.
Yes.
But it's funny how your mind thinks certain things happen in certain orders. And yeah, you've just convinced yourself that that's what happens.
100%. Chris Mandel, I've caused a bit of a stink.
And oh, no, what happened?
Well, do you remember, like, was it the, I think it was the first rewatch that we did. I made a very flippant, not accusation, just kind of comment that, or question, posed a question to you and to the Great Dragon Cast listeners, where I said, do we consider Game of Thrones to be a UK or American show? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Well, did this ruffle a few feathers?
Well, who do you think, if you had to pick a side on the Atlantic that it would have ruffled, where would you place your bets?
I think even picking a side would fan the flames of this in a direction that neither of us would like. So I'm going to say nothing.
I've upset America. Chris right. Mandel.
Who? No, I'm joking.
Just the whole of America.
Never heard of her. No.
First of all, someone popped in onto YouTube, and this was nice comment. Fair enough. You know, and made a valid argument where they said it's a British show. Lol. This is Alice to you 448. Hey, Alice. Today I learned that George R.R. Martin, Daniel and David, Ryan Condal, HBO, Warner Brothers, etc., all from the UK. Laughing face with the crying eyes emoji, just giving you a hard time, lol. It's created by Americans. Hang on a sec, it carries on. It's created by Americans, written by Americans, owned by Americans, just with mostly British actors.
Owned.
After every name you listed,
mostly.
I don't want to...
We've touched a nerve, and it's just well, that was, we weren't intending to.
That was the lightest touches of nerves. If however, you go over to our Apple podcast reviews.
Oh, no.
Which, incidentally, has been really quite engaged. Thank you to everybody that's taken the time to go and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because it is a massive pain in the arse to leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
So it's not your first instinct when you listen to a podcast to go and leave a response. So that is very kind. I'm a bit nervous to look in case people are being rude about me.
No one's being rude about you.
Okay, fine. I don't care. It's good. That's fine.
So
continue.
So we'll start off with a good one. By far the most superior Thrones-related podcast out there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
From Nikki. I absolutely love Dragon Cast. I adored House of the Dragon. Listened to Jamie, Chris and their weekly guests. It was not only a great listen, but really helped unpick some of the things I'd missed.
Thank you. That's nice. Thank you.
On the flip side, one star review here. And this is a long, long one star review.
Oh,
this was by who wrote this? This was Drone with an N at the end. If you're listening, no hard feelings. You're entitled to your wrong opinion. You're entitled to your opinion. Yeah. One star. I was really excited to listen to this, and yet they made the first episode, or the 18th, you pick. All about being USA versus England. The English podcasts claimed anyone remotely adjacent to a UK identity, whether the actor would want that or not. I'm not a USA apologist, however. I'm an American who is very fascinated by British history, but I truly don't see the value in arguing about this being a British or an American show. If we're going to start talking about the politics of Britain versus the US, we're going to have to talk a lot about some incredibly unsavoury events that aren't involved in the War of the Roses or other events that the show is based on. I wouldn't have bothered making a comment, but to say that America has no history is just so ignorant and disappointing, and honestly, just a strange thing for a podcast like this to say. Indigenous Americans have an incredibly rich and long history, a history that colonizers tried to erase and they failed in doing so. I hope the hosts of this podcast will do a bit of research into not only the history that inspired A Song of Ice and Fire, but also about just exactly what British colonialism entailed. I've opened a fucking can of worms here. Again, I was hoping for a fun podcast about Game of Thrones and was so confused and disappointed that I felt the need to leave this comment. If you want to be proud of the British actors, that's great. You don't need to.
We love them.
You don't need
them.
To tear down entire cultures you know nothing about in the process. Okay.
The thing I would say is, first of all, valid. Yeah. I know nothing. I didn't. About
I wasn't. I very picked up a very valid point when I made that very flippant, silly comment.
But this is
very flippant joke really about Americans having no history. I was referring to modern America. I was not quite wrongly including indigenous Americans in that. I apologize.
Also, I don't remember. I don't remember it being a focal part of a podcast, but. What I learned working in Morrison's when I was a teenager is that if people have a bad experience, they are more likely to let you know than if they have a good experience. Correct. And so a bad experience listening to us can cause someone to leave.
And hey, you know what? If this one person has taken the time to write that in, it means that others will have probably have thought it. And if those others have given us another chance, I'd like to apologize. It was a flippant throwaway thing. I was commenting because, and I guess, yes, you're right. The people that the previous person mentioned, Ryan. Well, Ryan's only House of the Dragon. Miguel is English, by the way, or certainly.
British accent.
So you mentioned George, correct? You mentioned Daniel and David. Yeah. You mentioned HBO and Warner's. Yep, absolutely fine. Fair enough. The it was Finance for America and the studio's American. I'd say 90% of the crew, British. Just saying.
Also, it's weird because I think just like
it's not an argument. I don't care. We slandered it. Shows. It was just a throwaway comment because I considered it to be a British show because on screen it's British actors. But am I digging myself? Shall I stop?
I don't know how much of this makes it into the final edit.
I think you're giving too much credence on how much I actually cut out of the edit.
Do you know what though? So, I mean, talking about what we do know about the history of Westeros, right? Obviously, the wall was inspired by Hadrian's Wall, which used to separate England and Scotland. And I'm from Cumbria. I grew up like 4 miles from Hadrian's Wall or thereabouts. And I've been on the wall. I mean, it's all rubble now, but you can walk it in a fashion. So I've been up there many, many times, and that was a big inspiration for the wall. And anyway, so that's interesting. Some good comments from people this last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I think, and you know, and that's a perfectly valid show, perfectly valid comment.
It is a perfectly valid show. That's why we're recapping it every week.
But thanks to everybody that does take the time to leave a review. And you know what? If a few more of you want to. Feel free. You know, I don't know how you do it. I've tried to leave reviews on Apple. I find it very complicated, but that's because I'm very old. I've got a question for listeners as well. I want some feedback. I want viewers' feedback. We've not discussed this either, but I'm thinking we need to update the cover art for Dragoncast for when the next one comes along. So there's plenty of time, and I'm thinking that like you and I should do a proper like photo shoot for it.
Oh my God, that would be great.
And I'm thinking Bagsy Viserys with the gold mask on one side. Who would you be? Who are you going to be? I mean, let's put this to listeners. I'm going to be Viserys whatever, because that's Bagsy. It's my ball. Would you like Chris to be Larys? Or...
just hobbling around.
Who could you be? Or a dragon outfit?
Yeah.
A pantomime
I also
dragon.
Think it would be I think we should mirror the... I'm too feeble looking to be one of your dragons.
I'd love it. Just there must be like pantomime dragon costumes that you can buy.
Yeah, I think actually recreating Rhaenyra and Daemon where they're sort of like back to back would be quite good.
That would be good. We could even go down to.
I can have a long blonde wig on.
We could go to the beach in Cornwall and just like we could make love under a dragon skull, couldn't we? Or was it the ship carcass?
I was thinking we could just do it on that bit of the south bank when the tide goes out,
where there's always that random guy building a sculpture.
He does a sandcastle in the shape of a dog, you know, we could go down there. That would actually be really funny.
Please, two men bumming on the south bank.
And I think they're related. That's a good option. That's a good option.
But ideas for Chris.
The other one is you're Jon Snow and I'm the direwolf.
Yeah. Like a bit of that.
Just with a really shit pair of ears on. There we go. We've got a healthy dynamic, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. And we could, I wonder if Thronecast would lend us the, we could go and like film it on the set or do it on the set there or something. That'd be quite cool. They probably won't let us do that. But.
No. Anyway. Good to plan. Let's talk about,
we are here to talk about the Ghost of Harrenhal. Another great ep, actually. I thought this was going to be a bit of a nothing.
Yeah.
Ep, but actually, ram-packed again. I forgot just how much they had to... We took for granted in the later series all of the setup that was done in these first two seasons, I think. Because this... Like, it got Renly out of the way pretty damn quickly. Just to... For those of you that don't know which episode we're talking about, here's a quick recap from our sister podcast previously. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. In King Renly's tent, Catelyn and the king negotiate the terms of a peace treaty between the Starks and the Baratheons. The tent flaps shudder as the ghostly figure we saw Melisandre give birth to last episode slides in. With a shadow blade, it stabs King Renly dead and dissipates into nothingness. The War of the Five Kings is now down to just four. A weeping Brienne is convinced to flee as Catelyn says they will both be blamed for Renly's death. Many in Renly's army change sides to join King Stannis, but the Tyrells refuse. Littlefinger uses all his wily ways to bring the Tyrell forces over to Joffrey's cause. Davos tries to warn King Stannis about how dangerous Melisandre is, but Stannis will not listen. He does, however, agree to leave the Red Priestess behind when they attack King's Landing and gives Davos the command of his fleet. In King's Landing, Tyrion coerces information from his cousin Lancel. Queen Cersei has ordered vast amounts of wildfire, a dangerous substance that explodes into unquenchable flames. If their enemies surround the city, she intends to burn them all. Tyrion goes to the pyromancers who are making the wildfire and claims it all for his own purposes. Theon takes control of the single ship placed under his command. His crew is less than impressed with their new commander. To win them over, he decides to besiege a castle and not the fishing villages he was ordered to take. Freezing in the far north, the Night's Watch is met by the famous ranger, Corrin Halfhand. He plans to capture a wildling camp to interrogate them about Mance Rayder's plans, and Jon Snow volunteers to join him. In Carth, Daenerys is enjoying the hospitality of Zaro Zoan Daxos. At a party thrown in her honour, Daenerys is approached by the warlock Pyat Pri, who invites her to the mysterious House of the Undying. Zara says she doesn't need the dubious assistance of magicians. If she marries him, he'll buy her a fleet to carry her to Westeros. Daenerys decides to reject both of these offers, for now. At Winterfell, word reaches them that the Ironborn are raiding the coast and attacking castles, so the guards of the castle are sent to drive them back into the sea. But Bran dreams of the ocean swelling up and drowning everyone in Winterfell. Arya is serving as the cupbearer to Tywin Lannister, a position that lets her hear all of the Lannister plans. Jaqen tells her that since she saved three lives in the battle that freed him, death is owed three souls. All she has to do is tell him, and he will see to it that they die, so she names the man who tortured the captives. That man dies from a tragic accident where he somehow trips, falls, and twists his neck completely around, much to Arya's satisfaction. So Chris, what did you think? What was your take on it?
I thought it was great. One thing that I think we've been sort of trained to forget with watching House of the Dragon is just how many storylines Game of Thrones had. Mm. And this episode went everywhere, practically. Yeah. Like, it literally went, we were in King's Landing, Winterfell, the Riverlands, we're on with Stannis, we're in Carth with Daenerys, we're on Pike with Theon. We literally went everywhere, right? Yeah. And it actually didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel overstuffed. And I just couldn't get over how kind of like dexterous the whole thing was because every location felt completely different. And I thought, I just was watching it thinking, this just doesn't feel rushed. It doesn't feel like they're like padding. It feels really, really carefully layered and carefully like laid out. And I kept thinking like, when you're in Pike, it just looks and feels different to when you're in Carth, to when you're in the Riverlands, to when you're in Renly's tent. Like, everything is so beautifully, like, realized on screen. So that was my first takeaway was that was just a joyful hour or 50 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought that really jumped out, and I think it's, again, because House of the Dragon hasn't done this very much, is when we go with the Night's Watch are on their expedition, you know, they filmed that in Iceland, and you can really tell. You can really tell. You're there and you're like, this is so bright and beautiful and stunning and also terrifying looking.
But yeah, the landscape they just spent was so fast much, as well, wasn't it?
They spent so much money on these locations. And I think, like, I just couldn't get over how brilliant it looked. And it was just a great episode. But I thought the visual language, the visual palette was just insane. And
yeah, and they did. Yeah. It's full credit to the writers, I think. I don't know who wrote this episode, actually. Why don't I have a look? Because, like you say, every scene, not only did it not feel rushed, we've come into this, we're watching this sporadically. So we, you know, in between that last week, we've not watched like 2, 3, and 4. We've come into this, and yet there was no scene where I was just like, oh, hang on a sec, what are they doing? Why are they there? Yeah. Who are they talking to? Because it was, the answer was in the question, you know, the question was in the answer, that it was all, it was show, don't tell. It was really, really well done.
It's really easy to jump back in, isn't it? And you kind of go, oh, Arya's at Harrenhal. Oh yeah. Like, she basically got captured on the way up.
Yeah.
That's kind of all you need to know.
Yeah.
John's gone on they've gone on a mission up north. We kind of know what that's about. And like, yeah, that's hard. Cause like this is a book. And I think they pull from different chapters to make this into a season of television, of television.
This was written by Daniel Weiss himself. He was still writing this one. Yeah. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. I just think it's really masterful how they have adapted it, and this is a great example. I think there's a couple of things, if I'm being a bit of a critic about it, where I think like Renly's death and the sort of subsequent fallout from that with Brienne, you know. I mean, we've not seen any other episodes. We've not seen the stuff before this, but my understanding is they got introduced like 2 episodes ago or last episode. Yeah. Like, I mean, Renly was in season 1, but like Brienne has only just been introduced. Renly's been killed off quite quickly. And I feel like that is such a big moment. And Brienne's reaction is like utter despair, but it does feel like it had to happen quite quickly to move on. Which is just a byproduct of, you know, you can't make an episode much longer than they make them.
So. And hindsight affords us the luxury of knowing what Brienne becomes and grows into, and what Gwendolyn does with the character so masterfully. It does suffer a little bit from Shrekism still at the beginning, I think, because she's not fully formed yet as a character, and felt maybe it's because we didn't have the prior episodes to see that connection between Renly and Brienne that it seemed quite melodramatic. It was like, all right, love, calm down a bit.
My recollection,
the oath thing just felt a little bit incongruous to the whole thing. It was like the scene between her and Catelyn, for instance, just felt a little bit daft. You know, it's like
it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think again, like she basically wins a place in Renly's like Kingsguard. She's only just started being in his employ, and my memory serves that like she's just kind of been obsessed with him for ages, like she's just like in love with him, but it's very hard to get that, like, and I think it kind of works backwards. I'm going to be a little bit cautious about speaking. I have not read the books for a long time, but yeah, she's kind of, I think she's just loved him from afar for a minute. She thinks he's like noble and wonderful, and he is, right? In the show, he's like very charming, very capable, very politically savvy, but like they just have to get him out of the way. I thought that suffered a little bit. The Catelyn stuff is, it's just funny because like all she says this whole time is like, gotta get back to Winterfell, and we sort of know that she like never gets back, and it is quite sad.
Yeah,
I can't remember what it is that causes her to not get up there for the rest of the to the Red Wedding, but she's just, I think she goes to her father's funeral at one point. It's just funny when she's like, oh, I've really got to go, sorry. And you're like,
I really should get back. You know, it's like, oh, you've just missed the bus. It's like, oh no, these things stop me.
Yeah, actually, we need you to do one more thing. But anyway, I think it's really impressive just how much ground is covered, how many scenes there are, how many things change. I even thought, and I last week when we talked about episode one of this season, I said, oh, the Daenerys stuff like is so boring and nothing really happens. And that is kind of true. And but I thought with this episode, it was just kind of nice to just get a real like sense of that culture in Qarth and like all the costumes and the cultures and the customs. And that whole thing was kind of like not my favorite part of the episode, but I do love the texture and the detail. And I think that is something that we haven't seen a lot of on House of the Dragon in the same way. Like everyone sort of dresses the same and looks the same and behaves the same.
And we'll be back right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Watching the Qarth thing, I was just like, that guy's a fucking Bitcoin bro, isn't he? It's just like, that is this the absolute bit. Can I interest you in kind of like in an NFT? Yeah. He's like probably kind of like, I bought a dragon NFT. Marry me and you can have it. It's that kind of thing. So she opens that safe and that's the big reveal, isn't she? She kills them all and opens the safe and is empty, or does she open the safe before and then
I think doesn't she take everything out of it? Is it empty?
It's empty,
isn't it?
He's skint.
She locks him in with her like assistant.
Handmaid who betrays her.
One of them betrays her, and she locks her in the vault. There's a thing in an episode that we've missed, a very famous scene with Tyrion and Varys where they sort of talk about who's got power, the rich man, the man with the sword, or the religious man. You know, it's like, who has the most power? And the line that Varys says is, power's a trick. It's just a shadow on the wall. It's whatever you want it to be. And this guy in Qarth is very emblematic of that. He says he's got money, acts like he's got money. So you kind of think, oh, I should marry him for his money. And then he's like, actually, all my NFTs are worth nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And these clothes are actually like from a sweatshop. I didn't pay any money for them. Yeah.
They're from Angels, and I've lost my deposit. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
It reminds me, that sounds reminiscent of Viserys's line. People think that dragons give us power. We've got absolutely no control over them. He says something like that, doesn't he?
Yeah, we should never have had these or something.
Yeah.
They're not. What else did we have in this episode? But I thought...
Carry on.
I was going to talk about wildfire.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well. There's a lot of foreshadowing. A lot of foreshadowing. I mean, literal foreshadowing in Bran's case, because he foreshadowed Theon taking over Winterfell, didn't he? That was his...
It's very interesting, actually, for one episode, how much supernatural was in here, right? Because we've got the warlocks in Qarth that can sort of do parlor tricks.
Creepy fella. When I was listening about, they're just like stoned, right? They're just from drinking Shades of the Evening.
There's a couple of things. Like they are, people fear them because they think they've got magic powers, but it's sort of hard to tell what exactly they're able to do.
Because they're just twins. Didn't it transpire that they were more just, they were just kind of identical twins or something, or have I imagined?
No, there's a few of them because they assassinate all the 13, which are the episode before the finale, maybe in episode 9, which we might see this in our rewatch. I think they kill a lot of the other people in the 13. But my understanding is that they're sort of, they used to be very powerful. They're not anymore, but people fear them because it's like, well, what if, it's a bit like Melisandre. Like, I'm not quite sure what you can do.
Yeah, but I don't want to bet against you. Yeah.
So we've got Melisandre. We've got the warlocks. We've also got what Bran is up to. Mm-hmm. And then the wildfire, like even Bronn sort of says to Tyrion, like, this is like weird, like wizard shit. Like, he's not convinced. And the way of doing things is that you win wars by getting soldiers and horses and swords.
Yeah, it feels like and shooting.
Yeah, Bronn is like, if we can catapult these like grenades into people, it might work. But like, this is so out there, and it's not the way to win. And Davos says the same thing to Stannis. Like, you should not be winning with this like magic woman. It's not gonna, it's yeah. weird. It doesn't feel right. And then even further in this comparison, Theon and the guy's called Dagmar, his new, the guy from, you know,
Finchy
from The Office. Finchy from The Office.
Yeah.
He's like,
what did you say? Frey Bentos.
My name's You know, Theon is like, right, I'm the leader, so they should do what I say. And he's like, no, you've got to do it by force. There's no God-given right here. You've got to take it. So that's what leads him to go and invade Winterfell.
Yeah, that's a really good
So I thought reference. That this episode, I thought, what a fascinating, like, it's you've got to win by force. You've got to, like, go with soldiers. You've got to win people over. Like, that's how you conquer. You can't do it with magic. You can't do it with money. You yeah. can't do it in blind faith. But I forgot just how much magic, for lack of a better word, there was in this episode.
Big shout out to Ralph Ineson as well, the guy that plays Dagmar, or whatever his name was, the Finchy from The Office. Mm. What a fucking great character actor he is. I mean, he does generally tend to play the same guy in every... that was basically just Finchy from The Office. He's got just one of the best voices. And if anyone wants a recommendation, something to watch, watch The Witch, which is a horror film set in like medieval kind of pagan Britain, and it with I think it was what was her name, Anya Taylor-Joy's first,
oh, that's right, yeah,
first ever film role, I think, and it is genuinely one of the most chilling kind of horror films I've seen in the past decade. Really, really good. Anyway, carry on. He's great. But yes,
yeah,
but lots of magic.
It's sort of interesting because I think like it does.
Yeah, Jaqen H'ghar as well.
Bit.
He was magic.
Shit. Yeah. And you know, we don't really like. He even talks to Arya about this becomes kind of relevant in season 6 when she's training.
Yeah.
You saved those three people and you've upset the balance, and the god of death or whatever he's called is like, we have to take three lives. So I'll take three for you. And I missed, obviously, the Tickler is, I think, is the person that tortures them. I think.
Yes,
in
that's
a previous
right. Yeah,
episode.
Yeah.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, if you'd sort of be like, kill Tywin Lannister. That's what I would like, use my for.
Yeah, kill Joffrey, kill Tywin Lannister, and then the Game of Thrones is over. Thank you very much. But it's a bit Genie Three Wishes, isn't it? You can't wish for more money. You can't wish for more wishes.
And also, that we don't know the limits of what he can do. I mean, he seems really good at what he does. So presumably
he's really confident.
He could probably kill Cersei, but it would take ages. And Arya wouldn't know about it for like months, probably.
True.
I did enjoy that,
and I forgot that the reason that all that began was because Arya saved his life. It was really good. I really, really enjoyed the scene between Arya and Tywin. They're
so good.
Their chemistry was great. I've forgotten how good that was, and that whole
written for the show as well.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah,
she doesn't do his cup bearing in the books. She is sort of held there. She's like a cook or something. But yeah, and I think that the relationship between is great. What I loved about that is that I think even in the pilot, she's like not paying attention to her studies, or she doesn't really know as much about the houses of like the North. And that comes to bite her in the arse because she tries to claim she's from like White Harbor or something, and he's like, well, what's your House's sigil? And she can't remember. So she goes, oh, I'm actually from Barrowtown and we're like the red whatever. But I thought that was a good detail that she doesn't know. She's not up on the politics and the houses, and that sort of nearly blew her cover.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And yeah, I love that. And it's, you can see Arya's kind of the assassin in her kind of forming slowly. You know, she had a great character arc, Arya, didn't she?
Arya,
I always forget. Yeah.
It sort of makes sense now I remember when she the faceless man stuff that she does across the sea, I found it quite frustrating. But, you know, you want her to be this like deadly assassin, but she can't completely give herself over to it. She can't be no one because she's so tied to her identity, and that's why she sort of quits. And it sort of works now. I think when we get to that, I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
I remember at the time finding it all like, oh, we've finally got her over here and she's fucking quit after like a month.
Yeah.
But it's part of who she is. I thought that was really good. And I loved that she was kind of like sort of laying all these like tracks that like, oh yeah, Rob like rides a giant direwolf and it like eats people. She was kind of like bullshitting to make him sound really fearful.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
And we didn't see Rob in this episode, did we? But we get the insight from Tywin that like he's actually really good at like battles and like commanding an army, and like because he just keeps winning these small victories.
Yeah, I forgot how much they feared him and how much
he's really good. Yeah. But I think what happens in season three is that he makes a few mistakes with his political allegiances. He marries that random girl, doesn't he?
And Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter.
Una Chaplin is Charlie Chaplin's grand. You're fucking kidding.
No, it's a good little fun fact for you there, isn't it?
Wow. I actually just watched her in something, which I can't talk about because it's embargoed. But she's in a thing.
Christmas tree. Someone had a Christmas tree. Was it her that had a Christmas tree up, was it? Can't tell us that either. No.
This is the longest. I'm drawing this out so much, aren't I?
I know. We're expecting like Biden or you know, when it comes out and it's just going to be like, you know, the fucking Joe Lycett, you know.
Can you imagine if it was Joe Lycett?
It's not, is it?
I thought I told you. I saw you on Tuesday, didn't I? We had an IRL.
Oh, yeah. I don't
a businessman's lunch.
Or maybe you did and I just...
I did tell you. Oh, damn, I think. Shit. So Rob marries this woman, and it fucks up his relationship with the Freys, and then there's other things that happen that we'll kind of get into in season three. But he's really good at running an army, being a leader, but like can't do the politics. But it's interesting watching it now, where everyone's like, "We need to do something about him. He's doing really well." On the flip side, he's doing so well that like Winterfell's sort of open to attack.
Yeah,
with Theon and his lot, and that is like one of those sort of storylines where I just find it a little bit heartbreaking because he helps fuck everything up.
And it was Finchie that gave him the idea as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Bran, who's like, oh yeah, send 200 men to go and sort this thing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very principled young lad. But the vision that he sees, he says, oh, there's, you know, it sort of floods with water. You know, his Osher, the wildling, is like, that can't happen. But he says, oh, there's drowned men everywhere. And the drowned men are like what the followers of like the sort of drowned god, which is like the one they worship.
Greyjoys. Yeah.
That's what they call themselves. And I just thought, I wouldn't have really noticed that at the time, but that's a great reference. Drowned men everywhere, literally.
That's great.
So yeah, fucking great episode. I loved it.
Notable introductions. We saw Loris. We saw Marjorie.
I
think first time in our rewatch anyway. I'd completely forgotten that Marjorie was married to Renly, wasn't she? And she was just happy to be queen while he goes off and has his fun.
They've got a huge army, and obviously the Tyrells have a huge, they have all the grain. So they've now, all of Renly's supporters have gone to Stannis except the Tyrells. And what I think we're supposed to glean from this conversation she had with Littlefinger is they're going to betroth her to Joffrey.
Yeah.
So that's sort of planted. She wants to be the queen.
Yeah, and I don't want to be queen. I want to be the queen.
And I think when I first watched it, I didn't realize that like Sansa was in danger now, that the Lannisters and the Tyrells, that this was going to like... It all kind of leads to the Red Wedding, ultimately. Yeah. Like, you know, the support is changing.
Which makes me want to know what we're missing in House of the Dragon. I know we've only had 10 episodes, but something is leading towards something called Blood and Cheese. I do not want people to text me or let me know what that is. I don't want to know what that event is. But something is leading there, and it's got something to do with the rats eating and drinking the blood. That's all.
All I will say is I know what it refers to.
Oh, you fucker. Of course you do.
I didn't want to know, but okay. I saw.
That's what you get for being clever. So be blissfully ignorant.
It is my curse, Jamie, to be this fucking clever.
Interestingly, the wildfire had the kind of scene around Wildfire, I think, again, I'd kind of misremembered, or I'd forgotten that it was Cersei that had began the kind of the assimilation of all of the Wildfire stocks, and that I don't really understand then why, maybe I've just forgotten why, I understand why Tyrion said, no, you can't let her have all this because she's far too knee-jerky with it. There was a great foreshadowing of how King's Landing eventually will be fucking flattened by it. They did say this will flatten, this, if this goes up, this will flatten King's Landing. Also, the person that introduced Tyrion to the Wildfire was Loras, who was the guy that came so close to stopping that Wildfire explosion, which was such a great, remember the crawling scene?
It's like a really it's like an 8 minute scene or something where he's trying to like put out the there's a single candle burning candle, and when it gets to the
note, right to the end of the wick, and it's amazing.
But
I just love that somewhere someone said, right, we've got to make him the guy because he was the guy that first mentioned Wildfire. And the whole thing, beautiful arc there.
Yeah.
Really
beautiful.
Specifically done just
out.
For us rewatchers, that must have been. It was really, really good.
And also, go on.
But I'd forgotten that actually, so when the Battle of Blackwater, I thought that Tyrion had like just gone off and sorted out Wildfire on his own without anyone knowing. But that he just kind of. Why then does Cersei, do we see why Cersei, when she, does she try and get the Wildfire and they deny her, or does she just
this is a guess first and foremost, but my understanding is that she, you know, like as a woman who can't command an army, like she is more predisposed to like other means to sort of command and to kill her enemies. And I think she's probably quite enamored by the Targaryens, where they could just like blow things up with their dragons. Yeah. And I think part of her feels like, I want to be like the, like Aegon the Conqueror.
I understand why she did it. What I don't understand is then why in the Battle of Blackwater, she wasn't the one that said, hang on a sec, where's all that fucking wildfire that I had?
Mate? Right. Maybe because like as a woman, she's just not, she literally gets shoved in a tower for her safekeeping. Like she's not able to like run things she kind of has to just sit in the background, right? So she's kind of working behind the scenes. It's only later on when like Tywin's gone and like Joffrey's dead that she sort of is able to stand out.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
I think at the moment I get the impression with Cersei that all the men are sort of like telling her what to do and she just hasn't really got any agency. But I think it's interesting that it's her idea first. Tyrion finds it and is like, okay, this is crazy because this is literally like pulling the pin out of like 50 grenades.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, the bay that Stannis attacks, you know, Tyrion has a chain made to, maybe this isn't in the show, maybe this is just in the books.
Go on.
I can't remember. We'll cover this next week, but
in the books
he commissions this gigantic chain under the water.
No,
And then he pulls it taut so that they can't get the boats out and just pelts them with wildfire. I mean, it's really like demonic. Maybe that isn't in the show. Anyway, that's something for us to look at. It's wild, right? Like I'm really excited for this episode, Blackwater, there's so many moving parts, but it's all in service to this one like battle. And
100%.
I think I'm almost spoiling it for ourselves, but I think the Tyrells alliance with the Lannisters is what saves it for them. Don't the Tyrells come in at the end and sort of defeat Stannis just when it feels like the Lannisters are going to fall?
No, I thought maybe with Tywin, because it's Tywin Tywin that bursts through the door, because Cersei is just about to give Milk of the Poppy to Tommen.
Yeah, right? It's about to like, suicide him basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, Tywin does sort of save the day, but I think it's because he comes in from his campaign with the Starks, Tyrells, and joins the Tyrells, and they sort of do it. But it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to that.
Bloody hell. This time next week, we'll be putting up the poll for season 3 already. It's really, really going. We're flying through
it. Going at some clip.
It's like 6 weeks, but I'm really, really enjoying
it. Over a third of the way in.
I'm loving doing 3 episodes per season, actually. It
Me
feels
too.
Like just the right it's not boring. It's not kind of like,
we're getting like the best of, isn't it? It's sort of like getting the, like a curated experience. We did
doubt the choices of the listeners this time around, but I have to say, episode one and episode five, good choices, guys. We already know episode
I think really, really good. So if people voted and they knew it was because these were like the cream of the crop, thank you, because I think we've really
we are going to change the voting system for next season as well, just in case we are in that kind of like Twitter poll anomaly.
We should think before we go just about how it's going to work with Christmas.
Whether
we can pre-record, we might even want to put a poll up or something for season three this week so that we can do an episode.
Christmas episode, don't we? Should we do it? I mean, today it's the 12th. Next week, I'm away. I'll be in New York next week.
You're in New York next week?
I'm in New York next week.
What are you doing in New York? Can you say?
Just being a cool fucking dude. I'm taking Mrs. East and the two youngest Easts to New York for 4 days.
Oh my God, can I come?
Yeah, fine. Yeah.
I'm like a surrogate child, aren't I?
You are, basically, now.
Quite close in age to one of your sons, aren't I?
Yeah, terrifying. So next week is the 18th anyway. So next week's the last week before Christmas. Maybe we record. So we'll have to record the Battle of Blackwater this week at some point.
We just do that this week, yeah.
To go out on Monday. And then maybe we record a Christmas episode later on next week to go out on Christmas Day. I think that might be.
That's fun. That might be
a fun thing to do. We'd be like the fantasy box set series version of Adam and Joe's Christmas Day episode.
Exactly. That's a nice idea. And then we'll come back in 2023. We'll come back and do
season three in January. I think that's probably the best way of doing it.
Oh my God. It's mad. 2023 just feels so far away. And it's
still 2019. Still 2019.
Yeah.
Or if you're in my mind, 10 years ago, 1990. Thank you very much.
Well, I've really been enjoying season two so far. Really looking forward to Blackwater. And then, you know, I just think like every season is full of hits. Like, I think
I forgot why I loved it. Yeah.
Season three, I think, is going to be really, really fucking good. Four, it is all good. I think six is the only one where I'm a bit like,
Which one is six?
Well, exactly.
Is that where Tyrion Bronn are kind of on the boat for fucking ages?
That's season five.
Going through the stone men. Is it?
That's season five. Season six is
good, isn't it?
Battle of the Bastards. I don't like that episode. Well, let's get into that when... I'll get into that. Don't you worry.
My wife has put in a request that we have to cover the episode. Her favourite character is your man... Derek Dondarrion, and the episode Derek. where he dies but where the Night King resurrects the dragon.
pulls it out
of the ice with the chains,
the big chain.
Great episode.
Kind of great. Yeah, that was kind of great, wasn't it? Like, that was the
good moment.
Yeah,
because we all, that's cause seven, we all I think. Kind of, that was like a, I think there's a bit of fan service going on in that episode, I think, a few times that we got it.
I think a lot of the towards the end, it's just, they just have to get to the end. So I'd be interested. I've told you before, but like, for whatever reason, if I ever go on TikTok, it just shows me clips of Game of Thrones. I wonder why. there's been quite a few bits from season seven, and I'm kind of watching it going, this is actually better than I remember.
Yeah.
There's lots of satisfying moments.
I think we've invented the best way of rewatching a box set.
I think so too. What I want to tell you is, I can probably say this. So I interviewed Charlie Cox.
The poet?
No. Daredevil.
Oh, nice.
And I was talking to him about Boardwalk Empire.
Is that Christmas? Is it Christmas, Charlie
Cox?
No,
that's not him either. But all I would say is, I was talking to him about Boardwalk Empire because he was in it briefly. And I was like, hang on a minute, I've not watched this. That might be up on my like ones to watch, because it's like every I would love it. I know it's like not, it's not quite considered like a Sopranos, a Mad Men, whatever. It's sort of the next tier
it's
down.
It's up there though. It's up there. Stephen Graham
looks good.
Al Capone. Yeah,
yeah. And Scorsese directed an episode for some reason.
Directed the pilot. I'm sure. Did you know that? Yeah. You know the story about Boardwalk Empire, though, right?
No.
So when Sky Atlantic was basically created specifically for HBO, it's like that's
yes,
like,
yes,
created as a conduit for American drama, HBO being the first kind of big deal that they did, and they've since done it with Showtime and various others. But they launched with the two flagship shows that Sky Atlantic launched with were Boardwalk Empire and Game of Thrones. And this was back in the day when pre-everything, when there was money and kind of like events. Sky created, so they had these two shows. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like, well, which one's the one we go with? We've got Boardwalk Empire, we've got Game of Thrones. Which one do we put all of our weight behind? So they look at it on, and now on face value, if you'd never seen either show, we had no hindsight. You look at two sheets of paper. One's got Game of Thrones. One's got Boardwalk Empire. You go Boardwalk Empire, Martin Scorsese, Steve Buscemi, Stephen Graham.
Gangsters,
blah, blah, blah.
Prohibition.
Blah. You got Game of Thrones. We've just come off the back of Lord of the Rings. It's a load of pretty much unknown actors. Sean Bean, yeah, fine, fair enough. It's fantasy. No one's ever heard of George.
Never
R.
been
R.
done
Martin.
On telly. Like,
never heard extent. Of Daniel and David. Cast, you know, what? Is that Lily Allen's brother? What? Off the two of them, they went with Boardwalk Empire, the launch party for Sky Atlantic. They hired out the whole of Battersea Power Station, which at the time was derelict.
Yeah, before it was full of like, before you know, shops of, like, and yeah, before street it was food. Like,
yeah, white company. and they converted the whole of Boardwalk, Battersea Power Station into a speakeasy, into a like an illegal speakeasy. It must, I swear to God, it must have cost £1 million to do this party. It was the greatest ever party old Dark Days Jamie has ever been to. It was incredible. Everybody was there. But the best thing was that everything was all about, it was a speakeasy, so casinos, they were like, you know, what do they call the fucking flapper girls, all of that kind of stuff going on. It was just insane. Guest of honour, Steve Buscemi, cast of Boardwalk Empire, at the front, on the main table. I had a really good chat with Stephen Graham in the toilets. That's probably not one, that's one for the book. but just ignored at the bar, at the back, getting absolutely trolled. I won't name any names, but almost all of the main cast of Game of Thrones completely being ignored.
Oh my God.
And I think I was with Alex Zane, like ended up like standing at the bar, just getting absolutely trolled with like the people in Game of Thrones who were just being completely ignored. Never heard of any of them.
And even if you had and you loved the show, they look nothing like they do on the show most of the time.
No, precisely.
Right?
So. Precisely. It was amazing.
And it's that's like, amazing.
Fortuitous ended up doing Thronecast, and it was like, I remember those guys when no one would even look at them. And that was at the launch of the show.
I've got dirt on you guys. I've seen how many canapes you had, among other things.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Some class A canapes.
There were no class A's going around, just for clarification before you leave that Apple review. Lovely. Right. That's it. That was a good episode. I enjoyed that.
Really loved it.
See you, Dragoncasters, next week for the Battle of Blackwater. Thanks as ever for your interaction and your support. If you want to leave a review, even if it's a one-star, well thought out, well argued review, always happy to read them. If you've got any constructive comments,
let it rip.
Do leave us. Let it rip. And we will see you next time. Until then, Dracarys.
Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.